A date who also looks like his picture? Unexpected. At Blue Apron, we love the unexpected. With the kind of unexpected ingredients that lead you to discover something new, Blue Apron offers amazing recipes that also let you show off your skills. An at-home dinner date that goes incredibly well? Now that's unexpected. Blue Apron. Expect the unexpected. Visit blueapron.com/unique and get $110 off across your first 5 deliveries, plus free shipping off your first box.
Thank you for downloading Tucker Center Talks. This is season 3, episode 6. You're listening to Tucker Center Talks, a podcast from the Tucker Center for Research on Girls and Women in Sport at the University of Minnesota and a co-production with WISP Sports. I'm your host for Tucker Center Talks, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, director of the Tucker Center, the first of its kind world-class research center and thought leader that accelerates systems change for girls and women in sport. Tucker Center Talks is a place where I get to talk to, amplify, and support my female colleagues, amazing women who study sport and gender. We let the data tell the story and talk about our research and ways in which we use our data to create social change. In this podcast, I'm talking to Dr. Lindsay Darvin, an assistant professor in sport management at SUNY Cortland. And for those of you who don't know what SUNY is, it's the State University System of New York. She got her PhD in sport management from the University of Florida, so she's a Gator. Her master's from UMass Amherst in sport management and a BA from Bryn Mawr, one of the Seven Sisters in political science. I didn't know you were a Seven Sister, Dr. Darvin. So who knew between being a Seven Sister at All Women's College and a two-sport NCAA student athlete, you're going to tell us all about your amazing research on women in sport. Welcome.
Hi, Nicole. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. So tell us about your research as it relates to women in sport. You have a couple different lines of research. So give us a broad overview and then we'll get into some specific studies that you've done and some interesting findings.
Absolutely. So, you know, I like to boil down what I do into three key terms and three key areas. So my research really seeks to uncover the obstacles and barriers faced by women and girls in sport and esports spaces, debunk some of the myths surrounding women and girls in traditional sport and esport, and then work to advance women and girls in these environments. So work to come up with solutions, data-driven solutions, practical solutions that can assist organizations, assist women and girls, assist teams in getting women and girls to the highest levels of both play and leadership throughout esport and traditional sport.
Well, you have your work cut out for you. If you're uncovering barriers, you're debunking myths, and you're advancing girls and women in sport, that sounds like a full-time job in and of itself.
And it is. It is, as you well know. And they feed off of each other. So, you know, in going through the work that I do, I feel very strongly that it's tough to do any of those things in isolation, and they kind of build on one another. So, you know, in uncovering some of the new obstacles, we're better able to advance women and girls instead of just sticking to some of what we think is traditionally happening. So they build, but yes, it's definitely a full-time position. I'm glad that the summer months are coming up soon here.
Yes, you and me both. So let's start back with some of your earlier work. You used homologous reproduction to look at the representations of assistant coaches of women's teams. And you did that with a colleague of ours. So tell us about the top level finding. What should we really know about that study?
In essence, men have essentially gotten a little bit better in that regard. So they are not hiring folks like them. So they're not hiring as many men assistant coaches to work with them for women's programs. And women have actually gotten a little bit better at it. So hiring more women into their programs as assistant coaches. So homologous reproduction really looks at this concept of, are you hiring people like yourself? And some of the earlier work before we sort of delved into some of this head coach to assistant coach hiring was done with athletic directors hiring head coaches. And you often found that men athletic directors hired more women head coach or more men, excuse me, head coaches, women athletic directors hired more women head coaches. So then we said, well, we're going to look at the assistant coach areas and sort of continuously update this because it's changing almost season after season at this point. And so some positive findings there, you know, again, men are mm-hmm. not hiring as many men assistants and women seem to be hiring more women. And that, again, feeds into this concept of advancing in that it may seem obvious, but a lot of the research I've done more recently has really solidified the idea that you kind of have to be an assistant coach before you can be a head coach. So if we want more women head coaches, you really need women to be hired into these positions.
Right, which gets to the pipeline idea that people always like to make the argument. Well, we have all these female assistant coaches. They're in greater percentages than their male peers, but so they'll just give it time and they'll end up in head coaching positions, which we know is not true. So this leaky pipeline of, yes, it happens. It's better if we have more women assistant coaches, but it's not always translating into more women head coaches.
And we're working on a project right now that's sort of going against this concept, right, of homologous reproduction, because we're looking more at some of the actual social pieces to hiring procedures, not just sort of the more objective demographic variables that you can study. But yes, and that goes to some of my other work where I said the same thing that you just mentioned. We know women are in these assistant coach positions. Unfortunately, those numbers have declined over the years. So we are just at about 50% right now in terms of total women assistants between Division 1, 2, and 3 in the NCAA. So that's a little bit discouraging. A couple years ago, it was closer to 60%. So right. When I saw those, you know, those numbers, and I said the same thing you're saying right now, which is, well, there are women in these assistant coach positions. So we should be seeing more women head coaches in the future, but we're not. I said, well, what's happening? And that sort of goes back to that concept of uncovering the barriers, because in a lot of times we just didn't know why these women were leaving. And I found, you know, culture is a big piece to this, culture and the leadership that these women are working for. So we have more work to do.
We certainly do. And it's interesting because our last Women in College Coaching report card that we released a month or month and a half or so ago, we did look at all the positions from head coach all the way down to graduate assistant. And what we identified was this critical zone of attrition between age 26 and 32, roughly, where we're losing a lot of female assistant coaches at a much higher rate than men. And so there's more women assistant coaches, but by the time you get to head coaches, you have more men. So there's something happening in there that we need to tease out further with research. And I know you and another study you've done talked to women assistant coaches in basketball, I think just in basketball, is that right? Where they voluntarily left. And tell us what you found with that group.
So I actually built this off of the Tucker Center report card. So I did it for, and I don't want to get this wrong, I did it for basketball. I picked A, B, C, and D sports so that it would be representative.
In each age group.
Exactly.
Grade group.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So I don't want to get, it was swimming, it was soccer, it was basketball, and I believe it was lacrosse. I believe those are right. Lacrosse would be
lacrosse.
The
that's right.
So yeah, so I did it for those couple of sports because, again, when we're talking about the grades, as listeners likely know, that represents how many women head coaches there are in those positions and what the grade level is. So what I'm finding.
So let me back up for the listeners. So. the Tucker Center Women in College Coaching report card that Dr. Darvin's referring to is we give a grade to sports conferences and institutions A through F. And to get an A, you have to have 70% or above of the women's teams have women head coaches. So she picked a sport in each A, B, C, and F, and then looked at women in those sports that voluntarily left their positions. Is that right?
Yes, that's 100% correct.
So what did you find?
So a couple of interesting things. And when you bring up those ages, if I'm thinking back to the women that I interviewed, they fall within that range
Interesting.
Yeah, I'm thinking there were maybe one or two that were beyond that. You said 32 was sort of that higher threshold, but most fell within that. And I found, again, when we're talking about sort of uncovering additional barriers and obstacles, I found a few that really has not been well documented in literature to this point, one of which being the win at all costs mentality. So the women really spoke to, I like coaching, I love coaching, I love working with the athletes, but I'm not a huge fan of what recruiting has become. I'm not a huge fan of being on the road, you know, or being, you know, working 90 hour weeks, even doing the recruiting when I'm in season, right? Because it's all about getting those next players. Some coaches
right.
even
and these were all Division One, right, Dr. Darvin? Division One?
Division One. No, I got Division One, Two, and Three. Represented.
Oh, you got them all. Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. And what, you know, yep. I think what some people don't understand even about the lower divisions with assistant coaches, first of all, there's no money for the lower division right. coaches, which is another barrier that is well documented, but recruiting is still there and the expectations of getting out and finding the best athletes. And sometimes for the lower divisions, it may even be a little bit more difficult because you're trying to convince some student athletes to come play at that lower level, perhaps. But they right. spoke to that, you know, they spoke to sort of that culture. They spoke to the culture of, you know, potentially offering more than one student athlete the same scholarship. So they spoke to this idea of winning at all costs and everything that goes into it. And beyond that, I do believe there's been a little bit of a shift with the millennial generation, and they surprisingly didn't talk as much about their own family dynamics, so their own spouse or children, as being a barrier, but they spoke to this non-nuclear family balance that they wanted in life. They wanted to see their friends. They wanted to be around for their nieces and their nephews, and they didn't have the time to do that, so that was a big factor for a lot of these women, but and then the final would just be destructive leadership practices. So a lot of them left because perhaps the coach that they worked under, it just was not a great representation of what they wanted to do in a head coach position. And we know in other industry segments, if you work for a leader that doesn't represent your values, your morals, your ethics, you don't see yourself being a leader in the future because you assume that that's what you have to match up to. And that's so a lot of them left like. For that yeah. reason. Yeah.
Huh. And of all those women you interviewed, did any of them, I mean, they voluntarily left that position. Did any of them go and work under another head coach, or did they all just leave coaching altogether?
They left coaching altogether, which is sad.
Aye.
So I did have one participant who ended up working sort of the tournament and the club cycle and doing some of that, but all of them left coaching.
Right. Okay. So head coaches listening, let's perk up your ears here. Let's be better leaders and mentor and support young women and not terrify them and run them out of the coaching profession. Would that be accurate?
That would be. And you know, I'm not trying to obviously blame current head coaches, but it was a major factor. And I will say, you know, a lot of the interviews, it was raw. So I did interview women who had left very recently. So between 1 to 3 years, so that the stories and their experiences were relevant. And there was a lot of emotion behind it. So I also want head coaches to know, a lot of these women desperately want to do this and they want to be coaches and they love the sport and they love coaching young people, but some of these factors just really became too much for them.
And they had head coaches that were both men and women, correct?
Yes, that's correct. So it was a pretty
even
split.
So it wasn't, you know, gendered per se. It was equal bad leadership for both men and women head coaches.
Yes. And and that leadership, you know, some of the destructive leadership were things that are just so ingrained. I mean, some of it really just boiled down to, you know, our expectations, being in the office for certain parts of the day, you know, just this controlling aspect. And I know that that's very ingrained in the culture of sport. So that's going to be a tough one to shift, but we'll work on it. We'll see what we can do.
Okay, so let's talk about one of your seminal pieces to date. I mean, you're early in your career, so I know we'll have many more impactful pieces from you to come. But you had a piece in Sex Roles in 2018 with Ann Pegoraro and David Barry, sort of maybe along the lines of debunking the myth, are men better leaders, looking at the the relationship between head coach's gender and player performance. So what is the key finding out of that study?
That men are not outperforming women. So we did not find that gender of the head coach was at all significant when it came to developing individual players year over year. So what we did for that study is we looked specifically at once players were on a team. So we left recruiting out of it. We left facilities out of it. We left culture out of it as best we could. And we looked at once those players are a part of your organization, a part of your team, how are you doing as a head coach in developing those players individually? And we did not find that the gender of the head coach impacted that year-to-year development for players. We did find some things that you may expect. We found position. So, you know, those forwards and centers tended to progress a lot more over those years than guards did. We also found class year. We also found years playing. So some of the variables you would think may impact did, but the gender did not. So we are finding that women are just as successful in these positions. So let's hire more women into head coaching roles. That stereotype has been debunked.
Okay, I love the take home following on the heels of the NCAA women's basketball tournament in 2021, where we had two amazing female head coaches coaching against each other. Give them a shot, get them in there. They're not going to disappoint you or not develop their athletes any more or less than their male counterparts. So hire them. And if I had a drum roll or a trumpet, I would make that noise right now, but I don't. So very impactful study. I love the methodology. It's a great journal, so it's got a high impact factor. And it really complements and debunks some of the myths that, well, you know, we just want to hire the best. Well, that's layered with implicit and conscious and unconscious bias. So what does the best mean? Well, the best means, you know, in most people's head that you hire men. But if you want to hire the best, you're equally as likely to have the best in a woman. So when all things are equal, why not give her the opportunity?
Absolutely.
Okay. So what is one study? I know you have many because I'm working on you with one and I know you have many others on the burner. What is one study that you're working on right now that you're really excited about?
And it's hard to pick. I'm not trying to sound like I'm working on all of these things, right? But it is a little hard to pick because I love all of the work that I do and I love the topics that I'm working with right now. But I have, as you'd mentioned, and as I mentioned earlier, you know, gone into sort of this esport realm and this video game realm as well. And so I am working right now on a piece that is seeking to develop a hostile esport environment scale. So, and it would actually be used or usable across the two spaces, so in traditional sport as well. And my team is building off of a qualitative study that looked at this and looked at why women are not in the highest levels of esports environments. So I'm excited about that project. I really want to get that scale going. I want to get it out there. And it was funny, as we were going through the different layers of this scale and as we're working to develop it, we realized part of the reason we're having trouble even in traditional sport in measuring these barriers is because we don't have a scale to measure them. So we're really using esport to help us develop this scale, but it can definitely and hopefully transfer over to traditional sport too.
Yeah, interesting. And who's on that research team with you?
So that research team is Janelle Wells, Thomas Baker, and John Holden. So we have a pretty diverse set of esport and traditional sport scholars on there.
Great. I always think it's important because no good research project happens and we can't do it by ourselves. So I always like to give kudos and props to our research colleagues when we have the opportunity. And then the study you and I are working on with the Tugger Center grad student, Courtney Boucher, and a few undergraduates. You and I are looking at male and female head coaches in Division I sports, taking a subset of our report card data, the head coaches that have hired all female assistant coaches. So stay tuned.
And I'm excited data. About that one too. I was going, it was between the two projects.
That's okay. Yeah, I wasn't pressuring you to pick ours. I knew we'd talk about it anyway. So I'm glad that you brought up your esport research because it's cutting edge and much needed as esport is just as a gendered landscape as traditional sport.
Yeah.
And maybe worse. I would rely on your expertise on that. I'm just taking a wild guess.
Your guess is correct. Right now it is worse. It is in pre-Title IX phases at the current point.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Well, lots of work to do there. Good job, job support for you, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So I always ask all our female scholars on here that I talk to, what advice do you give young women scholars who want to advance their careers as researchers and scholars in the academy?
And it's great that you brought up, and I'm glad that you asked me to mention my research team, because that's something I think that's incredibly overlooked. And I really do want to give my advisor, Dr. Sagas, a lot of props for this when I was a grad student. But work, you know, diversify your research network, work with a variety of individuals, try to expand as best you can, talk to your advisor if you're a current PhD student or candidate about doing that, if they're supportive of that. Hopefully they are, because I think it's incredibly important. And find sponsors in the space. So if you have someone that you're working with, a woman in the space, a man in the space that you see as being a great, not only mentor, but sponsor, really, you know, not just latch onto that, but really, you know, be supportive of that as well for your own career. I've done that and it's been great for me. And this is, I'll leave them with a funny one too. Get on social media. I use Twitter quite a bit. That Sex Trolls piece came out of a Twitter connection that I made, and we all had actually written and done the research before we even met in person. So we wrote that paper prior to even meeting live. And obviously during the current pandemic, that's happening quite a bit more, but it happened even back in 2016, 2017 when we were writing the piece. So Twitter has been a phenomenal tool for me to connect and network with folks in this space. So I always like to give that a shout out too.
Yeah. And so your Twitter handle, I think, is Dr. Lindsay Darvin. Is that right?
That's correct. Yep. At Dr. Lindsay Darvin.
DR. Yep. Dr. Lindsay Darvin. And it's Lindsay with an S-E, not a A. Yes. S-E-Y, not S-A-Y.
S-E-Y. Yep. And it's Darvin with a V as in Victor, not Darwin. I get that sometimes too. Both. So I've got both.
Okay. Got it. All right. So we're going to end with a speed round here. And I think that's really good advice, Dr. Darvin, is grow your network, diversify your research teams, and use social media and find people that are doing similar work on social media. I mean, I follow you. I follow a lot of our colleagues, and it just really helps me as well stay up to date. Like, who's interested in what I'm interested in? Mm-hmm. And how do we connect and create social change together?
Right.
Okay, speed round. Here we go. Favorite badass woman right now?
I've got to go with Megan Rapinoe.
Okay.
Number one.
Very good. Dr. Janet Fink picked Rapinoe as well. So you're in good company. All right. Favorite book you're reading right now?
So I'm actually rereading a book, and I would highly suggest it to all women in this space too. It's called Grit. So I would highly suggest reading that. It's a good one.
Mm-hmm. Duckworth?
Yep. Duckworth. Angela Duckworth.
Okay. Grit. We all need it. It's been important in the last year. One influential female scholar that's helped you get to where you're at today.
I really have to shout out. Well, can I pick two? This is tough. I really want to shout out both Neff Walker at UMass, now the vice chancellor there. And then I also want to shout out Ann Pigoraro, because both of those. So again, when I talk about finding sponsors in the space, I would not be where I am right now if it wasn't for Neff Walker. I remember sitting in her office when I was a master's student at UMass and her kind of telling me about this career. And then of course with Ann, just all of the work that we've been able to do together and her mentorship with research has been phenomenal.
Two of the greats, and you can hear them on past episodes of Tucker Center Talks.
I do not disagree with your choices, and of course, you can always pick more than one. Most people do. We call that the double tap.
There we go.
All right, Dr. Darvin, it's so good to have you on Tucker Center Talks and learn about your good work and hear what's coming down the pike. So thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
So as we wrap up this episode of Tucker Center Talks, be sure to check out our many free evidence-based resources on our website at tuckercenter.org. follow us on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, and, you know, find us anywhere where that we're out there at Tucker Center. You can find the show notes with links and resources for this episode at wispsports.com. Look for Tucker Center Talks under the Listen tab, where you'll find more conversations from the world of women's sport. Thank you for listening and helping us turn up the volume for women's sport. That's a wrap for Tucker Center Talks. I'm your host, Dr. Nicole Lavoie, signing off to make a difference in the lives of girls and women in sport. Give yourself grace and always let the data tell the story.
Redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino online.
I was only playing for fun, so winning was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's favorite free online social casino. You too could have the chance to win life-changing cash prizes. Absolutely anybody could be like Mary. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and play for free now. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of the winner.